It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Stop letting the summer heat make you miserable at home. The revolutionary portable AC unit from NoMoreHot.com gives you instant cooling anywhere without the huge electricity bills. Whether it's your hot bedroom or stuffy living room, this portable cooling device from NoMoreHot.com is a must, unless you love sweating all summer long. Visit NoMoreHot.com and save 50% on your purchase of the number one portable cooling device in the United States today. That's NoMoreHot.com.
But mostly I would say, funny enough, it also echoes something very ancient and very rich, almost like Shakespeare on wheels. You know, you've got like rivalry and you've got, tragic downfalls, and all of a sudden you've got unprecedented, unheard of heroes.
Hello and welcome to the James Allen on F1 podcast brought to you by Autosport. Monaco wasn't the most exciting Grand Prix. Lando Norris closed the gap in the title race on his teammate Oscar Piastri with his first victory on the streets, while Max Verstappen stayed in touch with another impressive weekend. McLaren extended their already massive lead in the constructors' table, and no one looked happier about that on the podium than McLaren Racing CEO Zak Brown. But away from the track, Monaco was a huge weekend with more people, more boats, and more going on than I've seen for many years. It really reflected F1's boom time. Here to analyse all of this with me and to look at what it all means for Monaco and for F1, we have Autosport's F1 business editor, Mark Manbryans. Welcome, Mark.
Thanks for having me, James. How are you?
All good, thank you. All good. Still buzzing from the Monaco weekend. Let's start with your moment of the weekend, though, because like me, you were there on the ground. What moment stood out for you, Mark?
The answer to this, when you pitched it to me, it came to me instantly. It was the pole for Lando Norris. Was incredible. I was actually down in the media pad at the time, but they have the screens up so you can watch what's going on. But it was just slightly behind, obviously, from what the fans in and around Monaco were seeing. And Charles Leclerc obviously set that fastest lap, and the crowd went ballistic. And then just that moment later when Norris managed to eclipse it again with the fastest lap ever around Monaco, I think that's worth noting, and a record that might stand for some time. But that was massive for him in particular. But that just felt like the moment of the weekend, because we also know around Monaco that qualifying is king. So yeah, it was a big lap and a big moment for Norris.
So there's been a lot said about the Monaco weekend and the race and that sort of thing. We're not going to talk about that at all here, because we're going to focus on the things that happened off the track, the things that perhaps people didn't see. Now, if I go back to the financial crisis of 2008 and 2009, one of the things I really noticed was that Monaco became uncool. Business people just didn't want to be seen there. And Singapore became the race for the sponsors to go to and invite their guests. And the sponsor money was really flooding in there. But since F1's renaissance from 2021 onwards, particularly, Monaco has become, I think, a real destination again. I mean, even Amazon's Jeff Bezos and his fiancée, Lauren Sanchez, turned up this year. So, Mark, what was your impression of the off-track Monaco?
I think you're absolutely right. I think we sometimes get lost that this whole new, brave new world of Formula One is moving away from its traditions and things like that. But what they've actually done is brought Monaco back to what it has always been. And I know we're not going to talk about on-track things. We know that the on-track stuff can sometimes be boring, but actually what it represents for people there going there to do their business deals or to entertain sponsors, the on-track stuff doesn't really matter. The on-track stuff is secondary to what they're doing around it. And you only have to go into the harbour on Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, and there's more parties on those boats than there are, you know, in London most weekends. And it was really, really obvious that everyone wanted to be a part of that weekend. And I just thought, for me, it was really just almost credit to Formula One that we can have a spectacle that might not produce on track, but you're still welcoming the world essentially into one tiny principality in the south of France.
It was, wasn't it? I mean, you had this tremendous turnout from sponsors in the business community, but you also had, it was very accessible to all, I think, you know, ticket holders, even down to the people holding the cheapest price tickets, or even people who had no tickets at all in the evening could party with the bars that pop up around the Rascasse and the swimming pool area. There was kind of something for everybody, really. But we are focusing in this episode a little bit more on the money that's pouring into the sport. I mean, Formula One is attracting a lot of new sponsors. And we're going to explore what's bringing the big money in to the sport. We're going to hear from the largest of the new sponsors this year, LVMH, who've come in with a 10-year, $1 billion deal using its multiple brands like Louis Vuitton, Moët Hennessy, and Tag Heuer, which was the title sponsor of the Monaco Grand Prix, the first time that the race has ever had a title sponsor in its long history. We're also going to hear from the new Liberty Media CEO, Derek Chang, on his vision for how F1 grows from here. Now, Mark, we hosted an Autosport Business Exchange event with F1 on their yacht in Monaco over the weekend, and it was exclusively for sponsors who are new to F1. It's never been done before. We called it Why F1 and Why Now? Over 20 brands came along, including Williams' title partner Atlassian, IBM from Ferrari, LMS, who sponsor Aston Martin. Lots of brands from very diverse sectors. You were there. What conclusions did you draw about why they want to be in F1 and why now?
I think the answer for why is kind of always been the same. It's a glamorous sport to be involved in. It's an obvious sport for us from a sponsor and partnership perspective, because the car is covered in your stickers. You know, the drivers are logoed up with your stickers. If you think of a football club, you've got a finite amount of space that you can put a brand or anything like that. But I think that's why. Why now is because it is, you said it at the start of the show, the boom time for F1. We don't know how long this will last. We don't know if it will last for 10 years, 2 years, whatever. But now is the time to get involved. You've got to think as well that they're making the decision to be involved at a time when it probably has never been as expensive to sponsor a team. Even the teams at the moment running towards the back are attracting sponsorship. We had coin payments as part, we're on the boat as well, obviously. Now, their deal will run in with Audi more than anything else, but they wanted to be part of F1 so badly that they, this year, have sponsored Sauber. So it's just, it brought, the event itself brought together, I thought, people that could share, you know, we call it the Autosport Exchange for a reason, don't we? They can share ideas and things like that. And actually, what we learned is F1 is such a viable product, whether you are a high-end watchmaker, like you said, like Tag, or you're on the other side of the spectrum, and you're not selling a luxury brand. You might be a B2B business, but F1 at the moment is the place to be if you want to be seen.
Well, let's hear then first from Derek Chang. He took over as CEO of Liberty Media from Greg Maffei, who we interviewed on this podcast in Monaco last year. Now, Derek's background, among other roles, is that he ran the MBA in China. So we spoke to him about F1's plans in Asia, as well as why brands are backing F1 and why now. Hope you enjoy our chat.
Derek, can I start with you? It's clear from all the brands in the room tonight that Formula One is appealing, as Werner was just saying a moment ago, to a much broader range of partners than ever before, and of fans, from luxury brands to consumer brands, big tech firms. What has changed in F1's core product and the fan base, do you think, that enables the sport to attract such a diverse group of new partners?
Thank you, James. First, I just want to say welcome to all of our guests from Liberty and Formula One. We appreciate everyone making the time to come out tonight and very much appreciate the partnership with all of our new partners who are here. And I think this is going to be a great event. And also from my own standpoint, I'm in my role probably 4 months at this point as the CEO of Liberty Media. So I am also a new partner to Formula One. But to answer your question, I think when Liberty acquired Formula One, probably almost 10 years ago at this point, it was very much of a core motorsports, activation. And I think what we've done over the last 10 years under the stewardship of Chase Carey and then Stefano, Emily, Johnny, who are here, is really make this thing sort of a cultural phenomenon that's gone sort of well beyond a core sports product. And what you see now is sort of, clearly it starts with what happens on the track, and it's a compelling product that we have out there, but where we've gone to sort of a much more mainstream and a broader entertainment asset. and you've seen it in sort of Drive to Survive. I think, you know, we have the Apple movie coming out this summer, which will, again, I think, renew a whole new level of interest in the sport. And then I think what you've seen in terms of the drivers and sort of how they participate within what this brand is all about now, and the interest level that people have following the drivers, but not just what happens to them on the track, but what happens to them in their lives. And again, as we continue to open the aperture of what Formula One is all about, I think you've seen new brands coming to us, including the ones here on stage. And we've gone sort of from an endemic sort of advertising-based, sponsorship-based, B2B and then B2C. We just announced a deal with Disney earlier this week, a tremendous deal with Lego that we did last year that has sort of culminated in a great spectacle in Miami a few weeks ago with the life-size cars that we rolled around the track. And I think what you've seen is the viewership continues to increase for Formula One. The fan base has gone from, you know, has gone now where we're probably about 35-year-old demographic, almost 50-50 women. And, you know, you're bringing new people into the audience all the time, kids, casual fans, all that sort of stuff. And the following on social media has continued to sort of drive the sport in a way that people now see Formula One as a place to be, a brand to associate that goes much beyond what happens on the track. And I think that is what has attracted a lot of the partners that we now have.
Well, Formula One had a successful return to China recently, and the continued record audiences turning out in Shanghai to watch the Grand Prix. I wonder, given your particular experience as the CEO of the NBA in China, what you see as the way forward for Formula One to really grow and expand in that country?
It's a great question. Formula One has a great legacy in China, for those who aren't familiar with it. And sitting in China probably 5-6 years ago when I was running the NBA there, which probably was the preeminent sort of international sports brand, global sports brand in China at the time, and probably still is, and being able to see the energy that the Chinese audience has for sports and certain sports in particular. And I think Formula One can, you know, continue to grow in that country. We were set back, to be honest with you, with COVID, because we didn't run a race there for probably, I think, 3 or 4 years. And in fact, it's a bit ironic because when I was running the NBA in China, I went to the race in Shanghai. Chase Carey was the former CEO of Formula One, but was there, was my former boss. And we were actually talking at the time about what we could do in China to sort of drive further engagement. And so we probably lost some time here over the years. But there is sort of a legacy and a history of F1 in China. We've been in Shanghai for, I think, 20 years or close to that at this point. We had a Chinese driver who, unfortunately, is not on the grid this year, but maybe one day will come back. But, you know, look, it's 1.3 billion people in China. People love sports there. They love brands there. And I think where F1 can continue to shine is, as we are such a high-end brand and the brands that we actually associate with, you're going to see that take up continue to happen. We do need to continue to build there and invest in the sport there. You know, we are across the major social media platforms. We're on with Tencent, CCTV, but we probably aren't where we would like to be, and we're going to continue to invest and make that happen because it's such a big market, and such a big market for major consumer brands that we really want to continue to develop that.
Of course, the other major market is the US, and one of the great successes, I think, of Formula One under Liberty Media is how you've managed to grow the sport in the US in particular. It feels to me like America must have emptied out this weekend and has come here in Monaco from the amount of conversations and people who've been flying in for the last 24 hours for this, what is going to be an absolutely spectacular Grand Prix weekend. But Derek, where does the next phase of growth come from? Because in F1, we always want more. There's always the next thing and the next growth. Where do you see the ongoing growth trajectory for Formula One in the U.S.?
Yeah, it is pretty amazing that we have all the visitors here from the U.S. because I think when you read about it, it looks like a lot of traffic going both ways has been stilted because of a lot of the political activities that are happening. So it's great to see everyone here. I think our growth in the U.S. has been phenomenal. And you look at it from, you know, multiple vectors here. A few years ago, we only had one race in the U.S. in Austin, which, by the way, does over 400,000 people in a weekend there. 4 years ago, we added Miami. 2 years ago, we added Las Vegas. So we now have, U.S. has the most number of races on the circuit, three races throughout the year, I think. You know, in terms of the viewership, we have grown viewership on ESPN over the weekend from last year to this year by probably 45%. We have over 50 million fans in the U.S. The brands that are now starting to associate with F1, the amount of activity that we're seeing out of the U.S. has been phenomenal. And I think that you're going to continue to see that. Drive to Survive was probably a big catalyst, to be fair. In terms of driving the U.S., and it happened during COVID when people had nothing to do, but really was a trigger for a lot of what happened, I think, in the U.S. And then we've been able to build on that with the races that, that we put forth. Cadillac is coming in the 11th team onto the circuit, which will be great, onto the grid, excuse me. And so I think we're going to continue to see the growth of F1 in the U.S. I mean, even like Lewis Hamilton showing up as a co-chair of the Met Gala. When you walk down Fifth Avenue and you see the Lego store and the Lego display with the F1 cars in the window, it's sort of taken over in the American sporting mindset, which is not an easy thing to do given how competitive the marketplace is. But we've made a huge inroads, and we think that we have a lot of room to grow there.
You're listening to the James Allen on F1 podcast, part of the Autosport Podcast Network. For the latest from our reporters at the racetrack during F1 weekends, head to the Autosport F1 channel.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Mark, what did you make of Derek's comments on China, first of all?
Yeah, James, it was great. I mean, you and Derek, you went back and forth with some great questions, and his answers were really eye-catching, I thought. And he admitted that it's a gap in the market for Formula One. You know, this is one of the biggest countries in the world. I think he said, isn't it, like 1.4 billion people in China. And it has grown slightly. The Shanghai Grand Prix is back after what happened with COVID and things like that. But we wrote a piece on Autosport around the Grand Prix this year. You know, there are a handful of Chinese brands involved in Formula One. You know, you compare that to other areas in the Middle East, obviously Far East, places around the world, that is so low. And it is an untapped market. But I did think him openly admitting that was almost saying, we know that we know it's an issue, but also we know what we're going to do about it.
He said that what they've done, if you had to boil it down to, you know, how have Liberty done this? What actually have they done? He said, well, when we took it over, it was a kind of core motorsport product. And what we've done is make it a cultural phenomenon that goes well beyond the core sports product. And I think if you stand back and look at it, I think they've done that. And one of the things that's kind of coming through loud and clear from the research we've been doing in the Global F1 Fan Survey is that F1 has been able to hold on to its core audiences from the past, the so-called legacy fans, if you want to call it that, but certainly the fans who've been following the sport for more than 5 years, at the same time as attracting new fans without losing the old ones. And I think we'll get into that more over the course of next month, but that is quite some achievement. And they've done it whilst broadening this appeal. The F1 movie coming out next month is just the latest example. How have they done that, Mark?
Well, it's a great question, isn't it? And I think it's keeping a firm hold of your roots whilst trying to develop. And someone like Stefano Domenicali being on board will be a huge part of that. You know, he's worked in Formula One for years. He understands it. He's worked at the highest level. And it hasn't just been this group of, you know, these investors coming in and chucking the baby out with the bathwater, if you like. They've come in, they've known that they need to keep these key. You look at Monaco Grand Prix as a whole. They could have easily come in and gone, look, we know this is historically popular. We know this is historic to Formula One, but the racing doesn't work for us. The streets don't really work for us. We can't do what we want to do activation wise. So we're getting rid of it. That would have been, you know, there'd have been an uproar from a large community of Formula One fandom. But actually what they've done is they've made it better. And they've done that in Monaco. They've done that at Silverstone. They've done that in, you know, across the globe, essentially. They've introduced races where they've not gone before. Then you've got to think they've tapped into social media, which was something, particularly under Bernie Eccleston, that they didn't go, F1 didn't go anywhere near, really, did it? Drive to Survive, the F1 movie, like you mentioned, the drivers saw it for the first time the weekend of Monaco, and we're going to have an advanced screening when we go to Canada. But that's going to be huge at the end of the day, isn't it? It's a blockbuster movie starring Brad Pitt. What more could you want to push this sport forward? So you hit the nail on the head. I think what they've actually done is moved it forward at a really fast rate as well. But also the thing they had to do, which they've done really well, is not lose the core fandom of Formula One.
Well, we had a stellar lineup of speakers at the Autosport Business Exchange in Monaco. And amongst them, we had a panel that was exclusively from LVMH, new to the sport this year. The speakers were George Siz of Tag Heuer, Vincent Bourgeon-Privé of Moët Hennessy, and Christine Droulian from LVMH. And I began by asking George what it meant to Tag Heuer to be the first ever title sponsor of the Monaco Grand Prix.
Thank you, James, and thank you all for having us here. And I think first I'd like to welcome you to Monaco as a title partner. We really feel this is Monaco has been kind of the spiritual home of our brand. The link that we have with this principality are incredible. Our most iconic of collection is Tag Heuer Monaco, which is was the very first square chronograph introduced in 1969. And it came because our kind of the leader of the brand at the time, Jack Heuer, just fell in love with the principality, fell in love with this Grand Prix, and he wanted to create a watch that really celebrated that. And ever since, this watch became an absolute icon. And we have been part of this Grand Prix in many different shapes, whether the partners of the Formula One from 1992 to 2003, whether the partnering with many different teams from Ferrari through McLaren and now through Oracle Red Bull Racing, through many drivers that wore our watches. I mean, the link is just incredible. We have been partners of the Automobile Club de Monaco since 2011. We work with them on other races such as Grand Prix Historique, which is a beautiful way to celebrate the past of this incredible sport. So to be the title here, honestly, it is really a dream come true for us. It's something that is we weren't even hoping for it in the wildest dreams, and somehow through serendipitous situation, it happened, and we just incredibly exciting. You know, for the last few years, I've been with the brand for 5 years now, and we always centered our activations around Monaco. We refer to Monaco Grand Prix as it's an institutional moment for us. You know, we stage the biggest thing of the year. We have a boat on the other side of the thing where we have 80 guests with us. And Saturday night has become kind of known as our big party. So we hope that, you know, with the great thing, as Spider-Man used to say, you know, with a great power comes great responsibility. So we really feel pressure and responsibility to celebrate this occasion and deliver something special. So that's what we're going to try to do. And one of the strengths of our brand is in storytelling, you know, and the storytelling that is authentic and it's credible. You know, our brand doesn't need to be something that it isn't. We believe there is so much passion and energy, and that's what we like to do. And we love to tell a great story, and that's what we have with Formula One now, and that's what we have with this amazing weekend. And we just can't wait. We're really excited and really thrilled to have you all here with us.
Thank you. Christine, F1 trades, I've always thought, on being exclusive and inclusive. And that's certainly a transformation. The inclusivity part of it is something we've seen more of a transformation over the last few years. So I'd like to hear your thoughts on that. And then also, because of the history, you know, with the Olympics, I mean, you did some amazing stuff at the Paris Olympics. But apart from that, I think this is the first time that LVMH has done a sponsorship which involves multiple maisons. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about those two things.
Yeah, thank you. So this is actually our second global partnership at the LVMH level after the Olympics, which were incredible. And what's true to both is that there is this dichotomy of, you know, exclusivity and inclusivity that we've had to tackle and work with. What's really great with F1 is that you have the mix of both. In the Olympics, it was more us as exclusive brands trying to see how we could activate an event that's entirely inclusive. Here, I would say F1 is a mix of exclusivity, but with mass cultural appeal, a really strong one. And that's really what makes it globally magnetic, I think. And so for us, what F1 offers is really a stage that's emotionally really strong. And that's what we're looking for, because for us, exclusivity is not just a price point. It's more of an emotional currency. And that's what we do all together with, you know, crafting incredible experiences for our guests. Money can buy experiences. And also, of course, with all the great work that our maisons are doing, including Louis Vuitton, that's not here, but all the creative side, we managed to reach a global audience. And we've talked about this like in the earlier panel as well. Like F1 is more than just a sports today. It's reached, I think, a peak of cultural relevance. It's fast, it's cinematic, it's emotional, it's global, it's connected, and it really talks, you know, the language of the luxury customer today.
And Vincent, from a Moët Hennessy point of view, how are you shaping your storytelling so to be distinct from what Louis Vuitton is able to do, from what Tag Heuer is able to do?
So for us is that, you know, we all have our own stories. So the Moët Hennessy stories, and in Formula One, it's mainly Moët Chandon story. So it's different from the one from Tag Heuer and the one from Louis Vuitton. The chance that we have is that we have a very long story with Formula One, and we were here 75 years ago. Actually, and we have been partnering with Formula One for like more than 30 years between 1966 and 1997. So we are not starting from nowhere. We have a chance to have very solid solid basis. So what we have to do is finding a way to join the tradition and the modernity. So we must respect, you know, the traditional fans. I mean, being myself, my parents, who have been in this world of Formula One for many years, but also these new consumers who are now coming into Formula One. And of course, you know, you have a temptation of only speaking about the past. But how would you recruit and seduce the new fans if you were only speaking about the past? So we are extremely proud of the glorious past that we have, but we are definitely turned into the bright future. And everything that we do now, and you will see a couple of things happening this weekend and the podium celebration in the cordon room, is made for the new generation and for the next generation of Formula One fans.
George, you were saying earlier on about the history, and of course one of my favorite, the most iconic, I think, Tag Heuer is the advert with Ayrton Senna, "Don't crack under pressure," which was so amazing. Amazing driver, six-time winner, of course, record six-time winner around this track. But from a Tag Heuer point of view, when you're thinking about your storytelling now for this new partnership, maybe give us a little bit of window onto that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the amazing thing about Formula One, what it offers to our maison, it's a tremendous alignment with the values that we have both on our side. Of course, there is the alignment on innovation, performance, but there is something else, and it's the alignment alongside the mental strength. You know, when you think of these guys, when they get in those cars every other Sunday, and they're putting their life on the risk, and it's a one tiny, tiny mistake, and you in the wall at 200 kilometers, 300 kilometers an hour. That is the definition of mental strength. And our brand purpose is based on constantly celebrating the possibilities that we have to surpass ourselves. We have the ability to become better physically, emotionally, professionally. And there are moments when this happens, and it's these moments of pressure that he's always been part of it. If you look at our historical campaign, you mentioned "Don't Crack Under Pressure," "Success is a Mind Game," and current campaign "Designed to Win," which actually comes from Ayrton Senna, another quote he had. It's all about this. And so for us, Formula One gives us this most beautiful, most pure visual metaphor to describe what our brand is all about. And it gives us this tremendously rich storytelling that we have been able to explore. If you look a little bit through our Instagram through this year, you will see how deep we can go and how many different stories we can say. And that's what fundamentally great watches are all about. You don't just buy the watch, you buy it with the story behind it. And what we have in here is just something amazing. So that's really is our focus here, to tell these beautiful stories. And on top of that, we have what Formula One gave us is amazing personalities. When you look at the Hall of Fame of Formula One, almost every single one of these guys at one stage or another driven with Tag Heuer watch on their wrist. So it's phenomenal storytelling for us. That's what it's key.
Christine, from a portfolio point of view, I think there are 75 brands.
Yes.
And growing all the time.
Yep.
How do you represent all of them under one kind of master brand and layer that into what you do in Formula One?
Yeah, that's a really interesting part of my job, actually. Everything we do, whether it's in F1 or the Olympics or even other projects like Viva Tech or whatever, we're always trying to build a common story and then leave enough space for the maison to be able to express their individuality and their own DNA, because they're all so different. So how do you do this? Well, you just have to go back to your roots, like to go back to your DNA, to really the heart of your genome. And for us, when you look at the smallest common denominator that we all have and that we all share and have in common, it's really about this mission of LVMH, which is the art of crafting dreams. In French, we say savoir faire rêver. And so we start from here, the art of crafting dreams. How can we express this in F1 and what we're working on and what we're going to express for the next 10 years is really this idea that in our workshops, just like on the racetracks, there really is no finish line in the quest for excellence, because we're simply driving at the speed of our dreams. And those dreams are different for each maison. You've heard George talk about mental strength and all of the DNA of the brand. It's different from when Hennessy, and they take it from a celebratory and heritage standpoint. And Louis Vuitton, you know, the victory travels in Louis Vuitton builds into that story as well. So we're building a story together where everybody can express themselves. And in F1, for sure, our maisons are not passengers. They're really part of the engine. Yeah.
What about from a Moët Hennessy point of view? I mean, Moët isn't the only brand. Obviously, there's others within the... How will other brands within that show up in Formula One?
Yeah, but the first way for our brands to show up is that tonight you have a glass of champagne. So if we were not here, you would not have a glass of champagne or a glass of Whispering Angel Rosé. More seriously, it's, you know, for us, is the way that we look at our day-to-day business is that we are not here to sell bottles. Our first mission is about crafting experiences, and the consequence of these experiences is that eventually you will sell bottles to consumers. So we are applying exactly the same model with Formula One, and it has been very long negotiation and discussion with Stefano's team, and that was a shared vision. We said, okay, what do we need to do to transform moments into memories? And Formula One weekends are an incredible field to transform these moments into memories. And the way to do it is through creating and crafting emotions. And we said, okay, we can start from the on-track, being the paddock club or the F1 garage. What can we do with Formula One to help and elevate the experience where people will not say, oh, I went to a sport event and I had a glass of alcohol, and turning it into, oh, I went to the Formula One garage and I had a glass of Moët & Chandon. It was stunning because it contributes into elevating the brand Formula One, but the brand Moët & Chandon as well. So we said we started from the on-track, which is probably the easiest one. But we said, how can we bring the brand Formula One into our own world, which is in the off-track? And it's where we are masters of crafting experiences. We have a very long history, very long tradition in doing these experiences. And it goes, for example, through restaurants and bars activation up to the official Formula One party. So I'm making a bit of advertising here. On Friday evening, there is an official after party with Hennessy, for example. Saturday, there will be one with our friends at Tag Heuer, and Sunday, there will be one with Belvedere. So that's the way, you know, we want to inject value and create this moment with the fans. Because we must understand that now the people coming to a race, they expect to have experiences on track and off track. It's they don't split it. They want to, they will even maybe not go 3 days in a row to the track. They may go 1 or 2 days, but then after they will go off track. And I see Emily here, but it's something that we did in Vegas very well. You know, for the last 2 years, we had the chance to partner. It's the perfect field for us and to craft experiences.
And what about from a Tag Heuer point of view? You've talked a lot about what Tag Heuer can get from Formula One and how you can do your storytelling, but how do you help Formula One to grow going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things we do, we hopefully all three of the brands and LVMH together, one of the biggest goal for us is to help sustain the buzz. You know, I think what Formula One has done over the, I mean, Derek, I think, mentioned it earlier, you know, when he was talking about the last 10 years, the growth has been phenomenal. You know, I spent, prior to Tag Heuer, I spent 17 years in professional tennis, and Formula One was one of our competitors, you know, and I've been following the guys very closely, and the growth has been phenomenal. It became a cultural force, exactly as Christine has said, and you transcended the sport, and the very few established sports have been able to do it. And the reason why it happened is because Formula One has focus on making the sport desirable, you know, and desirable in terms of the presentation, desirable in terms of who is here. That probably, for me, of all the things you have done, is one of the best things, because there's, when you look who is here this week, you know, but not just here in Monaco, 23 other weekends around the year, it's basically every time you have 100-150 of world-class celebrities, and it increases the desirability. And fundamentally, that's one of the most important things in almost any business, especially in our luxury business. It is all about desirability. And I think that Formula One has elevated this to a level that no other sport has done. And our goal and our hope is to help them to sustain it through great storytellings, through activations, by taking the races into the cities, through, you know, pop-up stores that we stage in, experiences that we stage in malls, in center of the cities, on squares, on continuing to support it with the celebrities. You have, we have each year, we bring 10, 15 amazing stars to Monaco and many other races, telling the story, amplifying, you know, social media, you know, that I think is one of the best things that we hope to bring to the sport, to continue to sustain this buzz, which has been tremendous. And I really think that the team from Formula One deserves a huge congratulations on what they've done. And we're really excited to be part of it and supporting them on this path.
Well, you teed me up perfectly there, George, for the final question, which is for Christine. And it's the final question of the night. And I don't know if you can answer it, but I hope you can. Formula One has somehow captured a cultural zeitgeist. You kind of teed that up for me perfectly. How would you describe the cultural moment that Formula One has generated at them?
I mean, it captures a lot of things. What it captures about the spirit of our time, I think, is really this velocity of ambition and velocity of audacity. I think it also captures the fact that you can't achieve greatness without a great team, and that speaks to the culture, I think, today. But mostly, I would say, funny enough, it also like echoes something very ancient and very rich, which is a narrative archetype, almost like Shakespeare on wheels. You know, you've got like rivalry, and you've got, you know, tragic downfalls, and all of a sudden you've got unprecedented, you know, or unheard of heroes. And so I think we're hooked because we're a culture that loves entertainment, and that's really what hooks us.
Mark, I really loved Christine's characterization at the end there of Formula One as Shakespeare on wheels. Rivalry, tragic downfalls, unexpected heroes. She really captured the cultural moment very well there.
Yeah, I mean, James, you and I have been riot journalists for some years, but I don't think we could have ever come up with a line quite as nicely that nicely sums it up as much as that. And instantly, I think you and I afterwards, we didn't really even need to speak about it, but when we covered the event on Autosport, on the business strand of autosport.com, that was always going to be the headline. You know, it was such a great way of summing up what Formula One essentially always has been. And I suppose that taps into it, doesn't it? It hasn't just become this about rivalries. You know, we've done podcasts and written stories about the greatest rivalries in F1, and they go all the way back to the beginning. It's not a new phenomenon in Formula One to have all of those things that were listed there. But yeah, the idea of it being Shakespeare on wheels, to me, was such a good way of just encompassing what we're now seeing on the track. And, you know, let's not forget, this was what was attracting a brand like LVMH into F1 in the first place, the biggest ever sponsorship deal in Formula One, all those brands coming in, Tag being the first Monaco Grand Prix sponsor. I've never seen a sponsorship deal, I don't think, in any sport that's instantly just almost there and so present. You know, we have the Louis Vuitton cases carrying the trophies. We've got sponsorships of other Grand Prix for Tag and for Moët, which is now back on the podium after all those years. So the maison, as it were, of LVMH have come in and just to put their stamp on it straight away. And the reason is because they see it as a place that is going to bring eyes because of the theatre that Formula One produces.
One of the things I really enjoyed about the event, Mark, as well, which is the spirit of why we kind of put it on together with F1, was you've got such a cross-section of different sponsors. Like you said, I mean, LVMH come in, and they of course, really made their mark in the Olympics, as we discussed there earlier on, with things like the cases and being part of the medal ceremony. And they're really embedding themselves in the event like they're doing in Formula One. You've got other sponsors who've come in, and they've never sponsored anything before, let alone Formula One. And kind of 7-8 rounds into the World Championship, they're kind of trying to figure out how best to activate. But they find themselves in this amazing world. And everybody we spoke to was kind of just really wrapped up in the occasion. And sort of, I think it's fascinating. There's a sort of tableau, really, isn't it? For people to come in, whether you're a tech sponsor, a crypto brand, or a coin payment system, or even a fragrance brand, you know, it's like, how can I make the most of this opportunity?
Absolutely. I mean, I spoke, not to single anyone out in particular, but I spent some time chatting with Alice DeLittle from Rebel Dot, who have come in this year as a, you know, as a partner of Racing Bulls. They work with them on their AI and things like that. And, you know, they've never been involved in Formula One before. They've not really done the sports sponsorship before. They're quite a new company, but they saw the opportunity to come in, and they're not just a sponsor. Yes, they've got a sticker on the halo, and when they drive, that's all well and good. But they're actually a core part of what Racing Bulls are going to be doing now. You know, we saw what happened at the weekend with the strategy. You can't tell me that things weren't run through a computer system to come up with the best strategy for the race. And so things like that, it's like you said, you have sponsors coming in that can really bring something to the sport, that want to see the sport as a way of saying, this is us, we're LVMH. You know, Lando Norris is drinking our champagne on this podium and being given his winning trophy from our collection of cabinets. Oh, and by the way, that watch on his wrist, that's one of ours as well. But then you have partners that come in and say, we almost don't need that front-facing thing because our work is behind the scenes, but it's just as vital, more so to the actual racing, than anything else.
What does it say, Mark, about Formula One and this moment that we are in, that on the one hand, you've got luxury brands like these coming in, and at the same time, in the same week or a week later, partnerships with Disney and Pepsi are being announced?
It's amazing, isn't it? Also, I think we spoke earlier about the global growth of F1 under Liberty, but this is, again, to shine a light on its growth in America. I mean, PepsiCo and Disney, yes, they're completely worldwide brands, but they are, you know, they're Americana at the end of the day, aren't they? Mickey Mouse and Pepsi, you know, Pepsi Cola. The Disney deal was really interesting. There was not a lot of detail other than seeing Mickey Mouse stood out in front of a Formula One car, and that starts next year. That is more of a licensing agreement, but we've seen that with Mattel. We see it with Lego. They work, you know. People are going to want Mickey Mouse dressed as a Formula One driver. They're going to want Donald Duck in an F1 car. It's going to really hit, I think. And again, this is aimed at that core audience of youth that is growing and growing and growing in the sport. It's something that F1 is trying to, you know, lasso and hold on to. And having been able to buy a replica car from Hot Wheels Mattel, being able to get hold of a Mickey Mouse, you know, plush doll or anything like that, superb. On the other hand of that, PepsiCo have come in. Weirdly, the weirdest thing I found about that was the Pepsi brand itself at the moment isn't part of it. We're going to see the Gatorade come in to sponsor the F1 sprint, which I think is a good move. It kind of sets the sprint apart from a Grand Prix weekend. It'll have its own branding. There's Doritos, which is, you know, another massive brand. And another one was that Sting have come in as the official energy drink of Formula One. Now, you think of the deals we've already got. We've got a whole team named after an energy drink, two teams named after an energy drink. In fact, Monster has got big deals in the F1 paddock, but now Formula One has its own official energy drink in Sting. And honestly, James, I don't think you can buy a bottle of Sting if you went down to your local Sainsbury's. So again, it's tied into the American side of it all, but it is such a global thing now, such a global deal. And I do think, I mentioned it there, but the Gatorade sprint and the partnership there opens up a whole new world of where new deals in the future could go.
Absolutely fascinating, isn't it? Well, I'm sure we'll come back to this topic, but that'll do us for now. My thanks to Mark, to Derek Chang from Liberty Media, Georges Cizes, Vincent Bourgeon-Privé, and Christine Drouillon from LVMH.
You can read all of Mark's latest F1 business news and insights on the Autosport and Motorsport channels. Do join our fast-growing Fantasy League community. Check out motorsport.com for details, or it's in the episode description notes here. Remember to send in all your comments and questions to @JamesAllen on F1 on X. My thanks to Dre on production, and thanks to you for listening. Please click to follow or subscribe, leave us a review and a rating, and tell all your F1 mad friends about us. We'll be back with another podcast very soon.
You've been listening to the James Allen on F1 podcast, part of the Autosport Podcast Network. For the latest from our reporters at the racetrack during F1 weekends, check out the Autosport F1 channel, wherever you get your podcasts, including Apple and Spotify.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.